the hit Paramount Plus original docuseries returns.
The last time I saw Max, he looked at us laughing, and then everything changed in a blink of an eye.
My feeling as a detective is that he was murdered.
Yahoo Entertainment calls it a spine-chilling docuseries showcasing real-life tragedies.
What about when your child who went missing?
We need to know the truth.
Never seen again. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
Freaking first cut. Golly!
Welcome to the First Cut Podcast. I'm Rick Gaiman, and this is your DFS preview for this week's Sony Open. Joining me to break it all down, it's not Greg Ducharme. Greg, a well-deserved day off. That right there, that's Sal Vetri of the Sal Vetri YouTube channel. What up, my man?
What's going on, man? Yeah, thanks. Happy to be here. I'd like to say, just at the start, it's been awesome just seeing everything that you've been able to do these last couple of years. So the listeners, the viewers of this show, they got a good one in charge. So thanks for having me.
Much appreciated. This is our first official collab. It's long overdue. I'm glad we were able to figure out a way to get it done. And here it is.
100%. I can't agree more.
Love it. All right. So this week's Sony Open. So Sal, we are at the final leg of our 2-week Hawaii swing, if that's what you want to call it, between Maui and Honolulu. And the course for this week, Wailea Country Club. Fun fact, this is the first place I ever saw a live golf tournament. Sal, can you believe that? It was years and years ago, but this was it. Sony Open in Hawaii.
What's the backstory? Why were you there?
My sister used to live there. My sister Wow. used to live in Honolulu for, I don't know, 5 or 6 years. We would visit over like winter break when I was in college, and this kind of ran into it. We said, oh, the Sony Open, they're basically giving away tickets to this thing. Let's go check it out. And that's when I realized I would never be a professional golfer, because when you get up close and personal, these guys hit shots. I might've told Greg this, but I don't know if it was on air, like Spencer Levine. I watched Spencer Levine, who was like the worst golfer at the time, hit a shot that I could not even imagine. And I was like, oh my God, these guys are absolutely phenomenal.
It's levels and levels beyond. I have a buddy actually that Hawaii's doing something where they'll pay for people's tickets to come there right now for whatever reason. And my buddy signed up to do that. So maybe I'll have to try and tell him to head there. He signed up and he didn't actually win it, but then he was just anchoring on the fact on going. So now he's actually going anyways.
Maybe that's the big marketing ploy.
That's exactly what it is.
You're going to give it away, get everybody's hopes up. And then when they don't win, they just go and buy a ticket anyway.
Great. Exactly. Ah, oh, man, I guess I'll go.
Yeah. Tough break. Wailea Country Club. So if you're looking for comparisons to last week's plantation course at Kapalua, very, very different. Last week, a field of 42 and 31 of those golfers have made the quick hop over to Honolulu, but the similarities are few and far between. Kapalua, tons of elevation changes. It's long. It plays like 7,600 yards. This week, a par 70. Almost. I mean, this is one of the easiest walks, Sal, on the PGA Tour. This thing is about as flat as you can get out at Wailea.
Yeah, exactly. You're going to have a lot of guys coming over from last week just in general. And yeah, that's honestly what I'm going to be looking at, is just basically approach. Like most week, it's almost a cop-out to just say approach is important, ball striking, all that. But this week, yeah, approach, putting to an extent, try and see how much you can get from that. That's how I'm going to be approaching this one. Like you said, it's one of the easier courses that you're going to be finding, one of the shorter courses. Par 70, you can look at those guys that succeed there, have some trouble there. That's kind of the top level of what I'll be looking at for Wailea.
And while last week we saw 100-yard wide fairways, they will be much more narrow at Wailea. Not a huge issue if you do miss the fairway. Obviously, playing out of the short grass, much better than playing out of any rough, no matter how thick it is. And we've seen low scores here. You mentioned that, Sal. Outside of essentially last year, which Cameron Smith wins in a playoff over Brendan Steele. I think they got to 11 under par. It was kind of wet. It was kind of sloppy. The wind was up for the most of the week. But I think in general, you are going to want birdie makers at this event.
Yeah, exactly. And that's something that will actually translate over from last week, at least, just if you're talking about just birdie fest in general. So you're going to have those narrow fairways, like we said. That's something that I'll at least look at in terms of just trying to find some sort of accuracy. But like you're saying, how many times are these guys, relative to most weeks, even relative to last week, actually going to be taking out the big stick, the driver? Probably not as much, or at least not have to rely on it as much. So it's not something that I'm going to just overweight or try and make it 50% of my decision. So yeah, I think that you can kind of just take we'll talk about some guys, but really look at this field, double, triple the size as last week's, and you're going to be getting a lot of guys in play to actually be live to win this thing.
Good point. First full field event of 2021, meaning we are going to get a cut after 36 holes. And there were a couple of WDs. One this morning, Patrick Reed, he's not playing this week. Victor Hovland, that news came out Sunday night. So a couple of the bigger names, they're being filled in with alternates. But we start at the top of the player pool on DraftKings, Sal, and it is led by Webb Simpson at $11,100. There are six golfers over $10,000. So right behind Webb is Harris English, our newly crowned PGA Tour winner from last week at $10,800. Colin Morikawa at $10,600. Joaquin Neiman, runner-up finisher last week, $10,400. Hideki, we'll talk about him, $10,200. And Daniel Berger at a flat $10,000. Which one of these golfers, Sal, is moving the needle most for you?
Yeah, so early on, the one that's going to move the needle probably the most for me right now is going to be Colin Morikawa. When you look at this course, I mean, you have Webb, just the par 70 El Capitan, if you will. But then if you want to look after that, hope some people get the reference, the assistant to the par 70 regional manager here is going to be Colin Morikawa. Right now in this field, he ranks second, at least over everybody's last 50 rounds on par 70s. And what you're looking for, exactly what I'm looking for, ball striking approach. The putting is going to be the one thing. If you ever just putts neutral, a zero, right? Doesn't gain anything. He'll be fine for you up there. And that's where I'm going to be looking. You had those back-to-backs. I had him in an outright, and I actually thought, okay, well, this is actually turning into something after back-to-back eight unders. Didn't do anything on Sunday, really. It was the one day that his irons actually let him down. But I'm fine to go right back to him. I'm not going to wait that final round too much there. So $10,600, Colin Morikawa would be my play in that range. As much as I wanted to go to Hideki, had to hold myself back.
We'll talk about Hideki in a second. I want to mine into Morikawa just a bit here, because I think this is kind of a strategic take, and I like where you're going with this. And it's a lot about perception versus reality. And in reality, Colin Morikawa finished T7 at the Tournament of Champions, and for the most part played great last week. But if you were watching and you see that he was, you know, one of the favorites heading into Sunday, he was one of the few guys who did not break par on Sunday. His irons were not very good in the final round. It's going to look like a big disappointment. So I think a lot of people might opt to stay off of Colin Morikawa because of what they saw on Sunday, when in reality, he did exactly what we kind of expect and what peak Morikawa is for 54 holes last week.
Yeah, exactly. And that, I think the whole perception versus reality thing that you're touching on is really the point that I want to get to there, is just this was a guy that coming into Sunday that you were looking at odds books was somebody that was very live to win the event. And now it's going to be coming into a spot where, okay, you have the guys that were in the playoff right now in the same exact price range, sandwiched in between those guys. You have Webb, who everybody likes to play on these par 70s, or at least generates and pulls that ownership. So I thought that early in the week, you probably think that a guy like Colin Morikawa will be one of the chalkier names. He might end up being that in this range, but I think there's enough names in the range in general just to not make it overwhelming if it was to be so.
Okay, I'll make the case. I'll step on the soapbox for Webb Simpson here. What he did last week at Kapalua with his driver was terrible. It was historically bad for him. He lost 6.5 strokes off the tee. I ran it through my database. I could not find another instance of him hitting the driver that poorly over the course of a 4-round event. And I'm willing to say that's not going to happen again. And even with that poor driver, the guy finds a way to finish 17th in a field of champions and guys that made it to the tour championship. And now you get Webb at what should be one of the best Webb courses. You know, we talk about him at RBC Heritage. You can throw his name in at of course, Wyndham or Waste Management, but here it is, par 70. Don't have to be long off the tee, ability to hit your irons, your wedge as well. Find a hot putter. Like, yeah, I think Webb's interesting. And I think the biggest thing for me, Sal, and I wonder if you have noticed this over the course of, I want to say it's been a couple of months, like the last handful of golf slates that we've had, DraftKings has been pretty nice to us at the top. You know, Webb's 11,100. I think in the past we would have seen this closer to 12,000 for the highest priced golfer. I think it's a lot easier to get the most expensive golfer into your lineups these days.
Yeah, I agree. And you get more of the full field, which is going to help. And I was going to actually say, I thought probably like an $11,400, $11,600 tag, because we were getting at like 3 o'clock. And I know if we were going to have the salaries, try and play the guessing game. So that's what I was trying to jot some things down. But yeah, I think that makes sense. You're going to get scoring too. So like out of the guy at the top, and you know, you have a ceiling on Webb. He's what, top five scorer for DraftKings in this field right now. So those are always things that you want to look for up towards the top.
Could you imagine if we had to come on here and start guessing salaries because they weren't out yet? How bad of a show would that be?
I mean, hey, man, I was trying to like prepare for everything right here. I was like writing stuff down. Then I was like, all right, it's like 3 o'clock right now. We don't got salaries. So might have to go take this thing to a whole nother level.
It would be great in the moment, and then when salaries came out, we'd see how wrong we were, and it would be terrible.
Especially because most people would be tuning in on Tuesday, Wednesday, right, and they'd be like, "What are these guys talking? Like, these are the people we're listening to right now."
Yeah. So thank goodness the salaries did eventually come out, not to make us look too much like fools. Couple other names here. We can go kind of quickly on these guys, but they are the most expensive. It's worth a conversation. The two guys who were in a playoff last week. It's Harris English, who comes out victorious. It's Joaquin Niemann, who finished runner up. And now what do we do with them? Right. I mean, again, this is a situation where these two guys were in a very visual spot. Everyone saw what happened. They're now front of mind. They both get significant price increases. I don't know if we should, expect more of the same this week, or if these are just kind of flat out fades.
Yeah, I honestly think both are probably flat out fades for me. I would be more willing to probably play Harris English if I had to choose one of them, just because of the consistency that we've seen for a much longer period of time right now. Whereas you're getting Niemann, and the consistency has come on, especially towards the end of last year, but not in the same way of top 20, top 10 finishes as much as you're getting right now to Harris English. But neither of them are really plays. I never thought in my life in this type of a field, especially with the top 25 players, I think there's like 10 or 9 of them in this field right now, that I'd be paying $10,000 plus for Niemann, and I'm just probably not going to do it. Then you get Harris English for the first time in 7.5 years, I believe it was, wins an event. I mean, I think good old Harry English is going to spend his nice night or two hanging out, staying up late, enjoying this victory, and I'm just trying to talk myself off of this play at 10,800, and he's just not going to be as prepared for this week. So that's just some things I don't really want to be paying up for these guys when they're surrounded by Morikawa, Webb, and some other guys that I think have a little bit more of a ceiling. Hard to say when English is coming off of a win, but consistency to that ceiling.
Old Harry Hands with $1.3 million in his pocket in Maui. Yeah, I would take a day or two, not think about golf, just chill out. Maybe rounds into form in Honolulu, but I agree with you. These are prices that I'm not particularly interested in paying. And then Hideki, who you mentioned, he was my one and done pick last week. The guy was difficult to watch. The shot tracker was even worse to watch. He lost like 9.5 strokes putting, one of the worst putting performances of his career. And he's a bad putter. So like it's always bad. And it was awful from him. I'm a little bit worried that he's lost the putter, right? As much as I like to say this thing bounces back all the time. Putting is so volatile, blah, 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 all that stuff. When you lose 9.5 strokes over 4 rounds, you might be too far gone for me.
Yeah, and I was just going to try and come in here for a spin zone and say it wasn't his worst performance of his career, but I don't know how much that's really saving him at this point. But yeah, did he finish last? I didn't end up seeing the end of the leaderboard.
Finished in a tie for last with Mackenzie Hughes.
No, that's somebody that I actually had a decent amount of exposure to, so not great. I would say that Hideki is somebody when I saw this, and I was hoping he'd be in the 9K range, or maybe even like upper 8s, but 9K range, and I could actually get on board with, okay, one of the worst performance putting in his career. He's really good on par 70s. This is an event where it's not as loaded at the top, but I just can't get there. I haven't been above the field on Hideki, played him in any meaningful amount of lineups in probably a year plus now. I question the total upside. And now when he's in this $10,000 range, do I think I can get a top 5 out of him? Maybe, but not as much as the guys around him. So as much as I want to get there, because I just don't see any ownership coming his way, him getting that 5-figure price tag is something that I probably can't get to.
Okay, so as we know, there's a price for everybody and everything. Is there an ownership number that if we know come Wednesday evening, Thursday morning, if I told you he was 3% owned on DraftKings, what would that number be that would interest you in Hideki?
Yeah, that would interest me. Yeah, yeah, I mean,
me too.
If he comes in like 10%, I probably won't really have much on that. But if he's at 3% owned, I could probably get triple the field and really not have much of an issue on that. In like single entry builds, 3 max, where a lot of my exposure is, I'm still probably not getting there, even if he's at like 3% owned.
Yeah, we'll see as the week goes on, but Hideki is kind of tough to swallow at the moment. Moving down into the 9K range, Sal, led off by Sung Jae-im. We've got our defending champion Cam Smith here. We have Greg Ducharme's pick to win. He already told us this like 9 days ago. He picked Abraham Ancer to win. Ryan Palmer, who played well last week at 9,200. He played well here at the Sony Open last year as well. And then Adam Scott rounds out this range. Another thing I've noticed with DraftKings in the last couple of months, this 9K range, at least in PGA contests, has been like 4 or 5 guys. That's it. That used to be a much larger range, and it's really narrowed itself.
Yeah, and I don't know if there's anything to it, but these fields that aren't like if it's not a major event basically, or anything that's just loaded with players, it's normally 4 or 5. Like this is not a weak field event, but just any type of smaller field events, weeks where some guys are passing up on, it usually seems to be 4 or 5. I don't know if that's something I've just noticed or if there's actually any type of causation correlation to that. But yeah, it's, you get a little bit of a weaker range here, which I actually don't mind. It's easier to start a lineup with two guys there and just get unique naturally.
All right. So of these guys, I'm a bit partial to Sung J.M., just a big time believer. But then I start rolling through the numbers and the guy led the field in strokes gained tee to green last week at the Tournament of Champions. That's more than Neiman. It's more than Thomas. It's more than everybody. He literally led the field. So that's probably where I would start. I want to know who you're most interested in here, but I also do want to dive into that idea of maybe starting in the 9K range, Sal, and foregoing everybody in the 10K.
Yeah, I don't mind starting in the 9K range. Like you said, there's not as many options, so it's just opportunity cost thing starts to matter a little bit. But yeah, starting with Sanjay, and then the guy that I like the most in this range is factoring in the price is probably Adam Scott. You don't have to worry as much off the tee. He was, I believe, he missed the fourth most fairways last week, which again, it's really not going to hurt you that much unless you're really out in the hazard area. So I think he's fine there. And he actually finished third in approach last week. That's something that I really wanted to monitor. The approach play has been coming back a little bit for him over these last couple of events that we saw. He struggled with it probably back last summer when we saw him a couple of times. Don't get to see him that much on the PGA Tour, but yeah, I'm fine to go to it. He finished average, finished 21st, pretty much like right in the middle of the pack last week. What really got him was the short game, the around the green play. I don't think that's something that I'm going to just assume is going to carry over in the same way of losing 7 strokes in those regards. So yeah, gained almost 7 strokes on approach. I think Adam Scott at that price tag, you might get an ownership discount on it. And I think you're actually getting a price discount.
I'm kind of on record of like, you know, Adam Scott, he only played 6 times after the restart. I guess last week was his 7th time. And I just didn't know what to expect. But if we are going to start to see this, you're right, the ball striking, the things that we saw at the Tournament of Champions, if we're starting to see that on a regular basis, now I'm starting to get interested in it again. And I do want to advocate for Abraham Answer here, not just because Greg told me a week ago that he's going to win this event, but you know, the difference between Kapalua last week, where driving distance was such a strong correlator to success, not necessarily the case here at Wailea. It's 7,000 yards. It's a par 70. Being able to find the fairway and then taking it from there is why guys like Webb Simpson, Matt Kuchar, Russell Henley have had success. And I think Answer, Sal, is built from that same type of model, right? He's never going to outdrive the field, but he's going to be a competitor. We saw that at the President's Cup, and he still has this chip on his shoulder, one of the highest ranked players in the world to never win on the PGA Tour or the European Tour. It's at least a pretty good spot for him.
Yeah, I think so. And I think he finished off his year last year pretty well. We saw it last week in a fine spot as well. I mean, you play as bad as you do just tee to green and you're still finishing top 20 small field event. I think last year he was dealing with, there was like a 2 or 3 week stretch where he was dealing with like stitches in his hand. That was like very underreported. It was like 2 or 3 stitches in his hand. I think that definitely messed up some of the stuff. That's actually where he missed his cut at the Northern Trust. But yeah, I think it's okay to get the answer in this range. Really the only spot in this range where I'm a little bit hesitant to go to is probably going to be the defending champion in Cameron Smith, if anything. Last week, you saw the approach play go, which it's one event, but he's been streaky on approach. We can date back for like 2 years now that he can lose that thing. He can lose his irons here and there. And then it's just also a price point. Are you paying a premium for a defending champion? I think where he is in this player pool, I think you are.
I certainly think you are. He gets the boost for beating Brendan Steele in a playoff last year. And that's kind of the problem with guys like Cam Smith, who are so reliant on the short game, is if he's not gaining 4, 5, 6 strokes on the putting surface, he's probably not going to win. And a lot of other things have to go right for him. So I think it's just a much more narrow path to victory for Cam Smith than it might be for some of these other guys. Like, I mean, Sungjae lost 3.5 strokes putting last week. If he's a zero putter, he runs away with this thing, right? So pretty crazy. And then the other guy here, and I think we could be on the same page here with Ryan Palmer, is as much as I love RP, as much as I know he's had success here at the Sony Open, now we're paying a price that I think is a bit inflated, right? He was one of the highest owned golfers on DraftKings last week, and he came through. Historically, it's going to be similar this week, right? There's just going to be a lot of guys on him.
Yeah, and when he was in like the 7 and 8K range, he was still picking up decent ownership for pretty large field events, like 15%, I think, at the Zozo when we saw him before that. But yeah, he was 27% owned, I'm seeing right now, last week. And like you said, he's coming through. So outside of Cam Smith, he's probably the one in that range that I'm not going to be getting to all that much. But I do think there's a good amount of merit to a Sanjay M plus, if you want to go Answer plus Scott type of a build, and just fading that 5 that 10K range, 5-figure range. You really don't have to worry about really ownership at all after that.
I mean, it is interesting. The more I look at it, you know, I'm not as worried about fading English, Neiman, Hideki. So it's really like, am I trying to dodge a bullet on Webb, Morikawa, and Berger? I mean, the more I look at this, I could probably get to a build that starts in the 9K range. We'll see.
Right. Yeah. And then just heading down into the 8K range, you have other guys as well that there's some, at least to me, some guys that stand out a little bit above the rest from maybe not so much like a consistency standpoint, but just like overall win upside, which is probably another reason why Scott stands out a little bit to me, just trying to value that like top one finish. How often do you get there and putting that into a little bit into the equation? That's probably why he also is at 9K flat, another appealing option.
That right there is a professional tease, because we are going to get into that 8K range on the other side. But first, we're going to take a quick break and hear a word from our partners.
It's the NFL offseason, but on Pick Six, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, the football season never stops. Host Will Brinson, John Breach, and Tyler Sullivan are joined by analysts like Brady Quinn, Leslie Deuceable, Katie Mox, and RJ White to keep you in the loop on everything happening around the league. Whether it's free agents signing with new teams, the all-important NFL draft, or schedule release day, Pick Six has you covered. As the face of the league changes with every team move and player pickup this spring, Pick Six is a must listen. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and anywhere podcasts are found.
Baseball has begun, which means you need to listen to Fantasy Baseball Today in 5, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Sample, every Monday through Saturday as we deliver all of your fantasy baseball needs in just 5 minutes. We'll break down the biggest performers, news, and prospects who could make an impact this season. Make sure to download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and everywhere else podcasts are found.
And we're back. $8,000 on DraftKings. Sal, I know there's a couple of guys that pique my interest in this range. It starts with Kevin Kisner, who in theory could be a pretty good fit for Wiley, and goes all the way down to Charles Howell III, Eric Van Ruin, EVR at a flat 8,000. Who of these guys are you targeting in the 8K?
Yeah, there's a couple of guys that I like in this range. And yeah, I'll go back to back with the flat pricing. I'll go with EVR. I'll go with Van Ruin here. He's somebody that we got to see last week, which in general, or we didn't get to see last week, but in general, what I'm trying to do is really underweight positive performance that we saw last week and not try and follow the hype of some of the big ones like we were talking about with those 10K guys that we saw in the playoff. But EVR is somebody that you're just getting consistency from. This 8K range, you don't really need somebody to win to pay off their price tag. You need, I don't know, top 20 is usually fine if they're doing anything from a scoring perspective. So EVR is the guy that I like here. He's 14th in this field in birdie or better. You're getting that approach in ball striking combination that's probably the best in this range, probably up there with Sergio right now. So EVR is in the range. Honestly, somebody that I'll ask you about is Sergio. We saw him last week. We saw him play well. And I really want to know what to make of it. Want to know later in the week if ownership's going to come there. But early on, he's somebody that has me a little bit puzzled.
The thing with Sergio is he's on brand, right? Sergio never goes off brand. From tee to green, he's phenomenal. From when he has the flat stick in his hand, he's closing his eyes and he can't figure it out. And he did it again last week at Kapalua. He gained nearly 8 strokes from tee to green. It was 4th best in the field. He was 39th out of a field of 42 in strokes gained putting. So the issue, it's weird. It's not necessarily an issue as long as you know what you're getting yourself into with Sergio Garcia. And what I think you're getting yourself into is a guy who's going to be a great ball striker. And there are going to be weeks. We're going to see a week like we saw at the Sanderson Farms where he gains 2 or 3 strokes putting and he wins the event. I think we're going to see that again. The problem, Sal, no foreshadowing. Like he doesn't build up to it. It's not like he gradually gets better than the flat stick. He finds it. It's just like he'll lose strokes putting for 8 straight events. He'll find it for 4 days and he'll raise the trophy on Sunday. So I think as long as you understand what you're getting from Sergio Garcia, that's fine, but it's not any semblance of consistency on the greens, if that makes sense.
Yes, please talk me out of it. Because I think that might be, I think when he won Sanderson, there might be one other time where he gained strokes putting since like this time last year. So it's really tough to have to rely on that.
It certainly is. And there are ball strikers in this range. You talk about Sergio. Russell Henley's here. Russell Henley at $8,700. He's making his first start of 2021. And if you run the numbers back to the tour's restart and look at just approach players, no golfer in this field has gained more strokes on approach per round than Russell Henley. He's won this event. He's won the Sony Open before. I think when he won it, he set the scoring record. I don't know if that record still stands, but this should be a spot for success. But I imagine he's going to be a popular guy in the $8,000 range.
Yeah, he's one of the guys that if you're going to take a guy in the 10K range, you drop down to the 8s, or just in general, I think a lot of people are going to prioritize their lineup in the 8K range with Henley. I mean, he looks good. Like you're saying, if anybody's looking at any type of database, you're going to see that one next to his name when it comes to just some of the ball striking numbers from the overall total strokes gain, DraftKings scoring, which is another thing that's going to be pretty important. So I don't really have a strong stance on Henley either way earlier in the week. I think that if I like some guys, if the ownership is going to be 2-1, somewhere around there, I just easily go to Scott. I like Scott a good amount so far this week early on. So I can see myself getting away from it. I'm pretty neutral to the field. If he comes in 15% owned and I'm around there, I'm fine with that.
Concerns I have. One of the guys that you have as a fade certainly catches my attention, and I want to talk to you about that, but I'll lump in Matt Kuchar into this scenario. You know, Kuchar is a guy that I think for about 2 years ran pretty significantly well over expectation in terms of the win department, and now we're starting to see him regress to the mean a little bit. I think he's going to catch a lot of ownership just because it's Matt Kuchar. It's a household name. It's the Sony Open. He won this 2 years ago. It should be a good fit for him. I'm not sure we're at that version of Matt Kuchar anymore. I mean, he hasn't played well. I think he's got zero top, I don't know, I would call it 15s in his last 15 starts. Something, I think it's top 20s in his last 15 starts, something like that. He just hasn't been good. He hasn't contended anywhere. And I don't think that course history is going to save him this time. So that's my fade in the 8K range. And you've got a fade as well here.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty solid fade. Like, you're getting the weekend out of Kuchar, but that's about it. He's at least making, that's what you want out of like a $6,000 player, not in your 8K right. guy. So yeah, I mean, Charles Howell III is somebody that if you're seeing any type of content this week, he is the course history god at this point. He's made, I think, 10 top 10s. He's pretty much finished like top 25, I would say 60, 65% of the time that he's played here, if not more than that. And for me, it's just, it's what is the upside here? He's had a couple of runner-up finishes, so that's clearly the upside here. But if he's not runner-up finishing for you, right, he's kind of priced for this, the course history bump here. Is your upside what he normally does, which is, you know, if he makes the cut, he's getting your 30th place finish. If I think my opponents, if we're talking DFS strategy, if I think my opponents are going to see that, see him as a safe play, whether it's in cash, whether it's in GPPs, and put him in there, I question what the actual upside is. Do I think that he can win this event? Honestly, yes, he can win it. But do I think relative to other guys around him? Not so much. So if I think that his upside is, you know, 20th, 25th, but there's some downside in the 40s or 50s, a miscut as always. Yeah, I'm okay to not get there, assuming that ownership is going to be a little bit inflated on the guy that, yeah, I mean, 75% of the time that he comes here, he's finishing with the top 20, top 25.
I just got reminded in the chat that Matt Kuchar won the QBE shootout with Harris English. Yeah, my bad. That's on me. I'm not going to count that towards his recent results here.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I want to know what that is, but I'm not going to try and play it off.
Oh, that's phenomenal stuff. 7K range. Let's bop on down to the 7Ks, which this is where I think things start to get really interesting. I've picked out a couple of value plays. I've picked out a couple of guys that I'm certainly going to be staying away from. But Sal, I want to start here with you, guys that are moving the needle for you in this very critical range of pricing, right? This tends to be where you have a lot of guys in the same range. The ownership gets spread out a bit more, and this is kind of where your GPPs can be won and lost.
Exactly. That's the biggest thing. Like, all those guys at 8K and above, far majority of them, 10%, 15%, 20% owned. This is the range where guys start dipping below 5% at a decent clip. So a guy that I like here, it's towards the bottom of the range again. So I'll name drop Siwoo Kim because I think he's fine in this range. But I think the discount Siwoo Kim, in some ways, he doesn't have the around the green game, might actually be Sepp Straka here. Sepp Straka is somebody that on par 70s has been good. He's borderline over the last 50 rounds, a top 10 player in this field. If you're just looking at par 70 DraftKings scoring, which is the thing that I'm really trying to look for, not too worried about placing. So what you're getting is a birdie or better player here. You're getting somebody with the upside and just a discount down in the bottom of the 7K range. I think that that's probably $400, a little bit too cheap from some of the stuff that I'm seeing. So Sepp Straka, I think there's upside to that play as well. There's obvious downsides, but he's been a little bit more consistent this time last year, really like towards the summer of last year before the stoppage to golf. You were just worried about made cuts at that point. I think you feel a little bit more comfortable about that now. I think there's some upside on Sepp Straka.
Sepp Straka has made 5 consecutive cuts, which if you look at the rest of his results, he's on a hell of a run. And what I love about Straka is he seems to always make my showdown lineups, Sal, because this guy, I swear to you, he's going to shoot the low round of the day. One of these rounds, I have no idea when it's going to be. And I don't know what he's going to do in the other 3 rounds, but he's going to put it together for 18 holes. I know it.
Yeah. I mean, I know that as a fact. I'm like, I probably, There's so many times I play Sepp Straka when he's missing those cuts, and it's a first round, you know, first round he's up there, not as a first round leader, but he's like fifth or sixth. And I'm like, all right, this is the guy that I needed to come through for me. Now we're feeling good. Next day, you get like a plus four performance and you're missing the cut by a stroke.
The name that I will spend lots of oxygen on this week is Sebastian Munoz. He is $7,800. We know he had a great stretch run at the end of 2020. He was contending a lot. He was playing well in some of these deeper fields. But I'm looking at what he did last week at the Tournament of Champions, where he's in paradise. He's, you know, essentially on vacation. He goes out, he shoots two over in round one, and a lot of guys would have just packed the bags, would have just hung out, drank Mai Tais all day long. Munoz goes out and plays his final 54 holes at 18 under. The aggregate of those final three rounds, Sal, was second best in the field behind only Joaquin Niemann. So I don't know if you like to kind of slice it up like this, see what guys do on the weekend leading into events. This is a 54 hole kind of look at it, but you know, he shakes off the rust in round one. He gets it going over the final three. I think he carries it over into this week at Wai Lai.
Yeah, I like it. And I think it is pretty important, especially like if you play any type of, if you're live betting, if you play any type of showdown DFS, it's always fun to kind of look at the splits that are happening each day. And yeah, I didn't know how well he was playing. Like I was looking at it each day. All right, he's up there at some of these categories that matter, approach play, strokes gained here and there. And then I saw your tweet and I was like, all right, this guy absolutely murdered those last three rounds. This is a guy that if you're an OG grinder in DFS these last couple of years, he's always down there in the 6K range. It's finally, we kind of rise with this man now. Now he's up to this top tier of the 7K range. But yeah, I've no reason not to get away from him. He's another guy kind of like Henley that just looks good. He just looks good based on where he's priced. You can argue that maybe he's a little bit overpriced, but I would argue back that the consistency that you're seeing, couple of missed cuts to end last year, but just loads of top 25s, top 15 finishes. Yeah, there's real upside in Sebastian Munoz, and he's a scorer. Like that's the thing for, that's all why we always played him in the 6K range. This is a guy who's like a top 20 scorer. Play him in the 6K range every single week. Hope he makes the cut. Now he's making the cuts and he's still scoring.
There was an event, I want to say it was Northern Trust. It was one of the, I think it was one of the playoff events. He like birdied his first eight holes and I was all hot and bothered and I was in a lather over here. But like, I mean, obviously he's not going to birdie his first eight, but like he has that upside. There are a few guys on the PGA Tour who can get unconscious out of body experiences. And believe it or not, Sebastian Munoz, one of those guys, and he is a very good price. Now, there's one guy that I think you and I are connecting on in terms of a fade in this range. It's Mark Leishman. Sal, he's been struggling over, I mean, since the restart, he's been pretty pathetic. We kind of saw something. I don't know. Actually, I take that back. I'm not sure we saw anything last week on Leishman.
And that's the thing. I think people are going to have that in mind. Say, okay, we saw the Masters finish of 13th overall. Okay, Leishman's got some life to him. Nothing at the OHL. And then I think last week, people are going to be like, okay, there's some stuff happening on the approach. He finishes with a decent performance, but I'm just not going to buy it all that much. Like I said earlier a little bit, if there's any spots where people are going to get a little bit overconfident this week just based on last week's results in a smaller field where maybe his performance last week actually misses the cut in a large field event, yeah, I'm probably not going to be jumping back to it. And I think the price point's just a little bit too much. If he was mid, low 7K range, which is basically where his play's been for this last half year to since he won closer to this time last year, then I'm probably not going to get there. He did lose five strokes putting, but the putter has not been there now for 2 to 3 to 4 months.
Yeah, that is certainly for sure. He's been one of the worst players on the PGA Tour since the restart in terms of strokes gained. And I'm not sure I see it turning around anytime soon. I'm going to need to see signs of life from Mark Leishman before moving any type of investment back onto him. The one interesting name at the bottom of the 7K range, he's $7,200. It's Cameron Davis. So, you know, we've been talking a lot, Sal, about the type of golfer that would probably have success this week. And a lot of them are going to be accurate hitters, guys that can hit their irons well, get a hot putter. Cameron Davis is not going to play that way. He's going to go out there. He's going to try to take it bombing gouge style. He's going to try to take on that 2-inch, 2.5-inch thick rough at Wai Lai and just try to make a bunch of birdies. And, you know, we saw him, he contended for a minute at Wyndham before I think the stage got a little bit too big for him. We saw him on the first page of the leaderboard at the Sanderson Farms, and he finished ninth here last year. So a place that he's got at least decent vibes. I think that he could be in store for a pretty good start to 2021. Is there anybody else here in the 7K range that we don't want to miss out on before we jump down one more time?
Yeah, I actually think that there's a decent amount of guys, but I'll give a little bit of a name drop to somebody who will probably be 1-2% on, and that's going to be Rory Sabatini. He's somebody that when you get to some of these par 70 courses, he plays. It's something that I've kept an eye on for a little bit now, probably the last year, and he'll come off of missed cuts and then play well. You've seen it at the Sanderson. The putter actually got hot there, so that's really why. But these par 70 courses, he plays a little bit better. But even not, he's a, I would say, consistent golfer that when he's making the cut, he's getting you somewhere in that top 20 finish. He's somebody that grinds out every single round as long as he's making it to the weekend for you. So Rory Sabatini, somebody who never gets any love. He's definitely a hot and cold guy for sure. So we're going to see him in his first start here. He's somebody that I'm fine to get to in this event.
You just made producer Jacob very happy. Rory Sabatini is like his favorite golfer. He could tell you hours and hours of stories with old Roars. So you've got a new fan right there, Sal. Jumping into the 6K range, it's a large range. We've got guys who we haven't seen play in a while. Some are most of them are making their 2021 debut. So this is value time. This is time to find a cut, right? Find a weekend. What are we expecting out of some of the guys down here in the sub 7K range?
Yeah, that's what I want. All I want is a cut. And if you make the cut, I mean, might as well look at guys that actually score highly, guys that perform on par 70s, guys that are going to have that type of a benefit from not having to take out driver as much. I'm going to end up going to, and it's tough here just because trying to rely on him at all, you're going to need this right at the last hole. You're going to have some sort of miscut, a sweat. But I'm going to go to Danny Lee here. He's made 4 out of his last 6 cuts. He's somebody that does score well. I think he's 12th in this field over his last 50 rounds relative to everybody else on par 70s DraftKings scoring. So getting a little bit of made cut equity lately and some top finishes too. You've had a couple of top 25s over his last 6 events. So I'll go to Danny Lee there. We're just hoping for a cut. I think what he can do after a cut is worth the price point.
Danny Lee's been grinding in the gym. I follow him on Instagram. So he's getting ready for his new 2021 season. He's ready to rock and roll. I'm going to throw out Brian Gay here, and this is a little bit scary because it's been a lot of feast or famine for Brian Gay over the course of the past couple of months, mostly famine, very little feast, but he does end up winning in Bermuda. And I think even if he wouldn't have won in Bermuda, I would have said there are probably like 3 places that Brian Gay is somewhat interesting at every year. And it's Harbor Town, it's Pebble Beach, and it's right here at Wailea. And that is kind of the idea behind, you know, Brian Gay, with his limited skill set, his very specific skill set, is really only live a couple of times a year. I think this is one of them. He's got 2 top 25 finishes in his last 4 trips to the Sony Open. He's $6,700 on DraftKings. And quite frankly, I just like him more than I like, I don't know, Andrew Landry, Andrew Putnam, Anirban Lahiri, the guys that are surrounding him. So it is with little confidence, but Brian Gay at least, you know, moves the needle like 1 inch to the right, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's fair. It's a lot of guys that look basically the same down here. Like, there's guys that, I don't know, players that we saw last week, whether it's going to be Richie Wernisky, if it's going to be him, I don't have much interest in going there. Similar situation as Mark Leishman, where he finished last week, is probably not something that I want to overweight, and I think opponents in DFS might overweight that. What do you usually do, or what do you have to say about Will Gordon, who normally, if this was a smaller field event, would be a little bit, or not as loaded of an event, maybe even smaller field, would be more expensive. He usually looks well in this range, but it's inflated by like 1 or 2 really rounds that he had earlier on. And I don't have to worry about ownership here. 1 or 2% normally it looks good for me. And I normally I'm like, it's going to be the same result. And it has been.
For whatever reason, and I am as guilty of this as anybody, Will Gordon caught a bunch of steam after Travelers. After that T3 at the Travelers, and it was like, oh, now he's in the sprint to earn as many points as he can to get his card for next season, and he's going to be super motivated, and he's playing well. And it's like, yes, all of that stuff is true, but it never came to fruition, and I still feel like there's that sentiment about him, which it really shouldn't be. You're right. I mean, the guy's missed his last 2 cuts last year. He does not have a top 25 since that T3 at the Travelers. And it's been a lot of missed cuts. It's been a lot of finishes in the 30s, 40s, and 50s. So, yeah, this is another thing where perception and reality are not the same thing. As much as I like Will Gordon's game, he's not a big-time DraftKings scorer at the moment, which is a thing, right?
Yeah, I think that's completely fair. Yeah, I mean, I think like last week you saw like Hudson Swarford, he like gained the most fairways, but did not much after that. And that's basically what you're going to get. Accuracy is not going to matter as much to me in this range down here as just going out there and being able to hunt some birdies and actually make the cut.
The only other guy that I'm vaguely interested here, he's also $6,700. It's Nate Lashley, who's made three of his last four cuts. The three finishes that he made the cut, they've been top 40s. They've all been in the 30s. I think that Lashley's interesting because we saw this when he won, I guess it was Rocket Mortgage like 2 years ago. And we've seen this at times in the past, is he can get really, really hot for like nine, maybe 18 holes, maybe 27 holes at a time, which goes a long way in DraftKings scoring. Again, it's kind of similar to Sergio Garcia. There's very little to foreshadow what's when it's going to happen or how it's going to happen. But at least I know that there is a bit of upside pent up inside of Nate Lashley. You know, down towards the bottom of this range, Sal, it's really ugly. I'm not sure if there's any interest in, I don't know, Michael Gligic. He was making a bunch of cuts before the year turned over. Wesley Bryan, usually pretty good with his irons, but at the sub 6,500 range, we are certainly into full on dart throw at this point.
Yeah, exactly. I think Wesley Bryan might be the lowest that I go at 6,300. Like Chase Seifert and guys like Nick Watney are down here, Kevin Tway, like actual golfers that you recognize compared to some other names, but not really making much cuts lately, not really stuff that I want to touch. And if we're going to go on a premise that it's a little bit easier to start your lineups in the 9 and 8K range this week, just some guys to avoid, you don't have to come anywhere near the bottom of the 6K range, let alone that 6K range. Like we were talking about some guys like a Sepp Straka in that 7K range towards the bottom of that. There's just a totally different level of golfer from $6,500 to $7,000 flat, especially on this slate. So that's probably where I'm just going to roll more so around the Brendan Steeles, the Sepp Strakas, even the Brendan Graces at $7,100 before dipping down into the 6K range.
The strategy is interesting this week, I think, even more than most. I think, you know, I'm generally a stars and scrubs type of guy, Sal, but I'm understanding, hey, this is the first full field event of 2021. We have a lot of guys who I've not seen do anything in 4 or 5 weeks. I have no idea what the shape of their game is. And I think weird stuff happens when you have guys off of a longer layoff. So maybe getting more guys, six guys between 9,800 and 7,200, maybe that adds a layer of security for me. I think that is viable this week and because of the pricing. And I also think it's viable this week because there's a lot of unknown from the vast majority of the field.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. And one thing I always try and do whenever I do a show for really like any DFS sport or sports betting is just try and pin in on the guys that either me or you in this instance just don't talk about and see if there's something to that. So what about Daniel Berger at $10,000 flat? Not much from last week. We talked about all the guys in the 9 and the 10K range, and for good reason, those guys for good or worse. And Daniel Berger was kind of this vanilla name in there after having a good week last week. And honestly, last year at points being maybe one of the best golfers after the restart for sure was up there in terms of how he was playing. That could just be a guy where it's basically like starting your lineup in the 9K range at 10K flat could be another name to at least consider and something that I'll probably be watching real close just based off our conversation at what his ownership levels are.
It's a great point. You know, Daniel Berger, it's a gift and a curse that he's kind of this just solid, underrated, nobody really talks about him. He doesn't do anything sexy, but he does everything pretty good. It's just like, you know, it's not as exciting as going out and trying to get Webb Simpson or Hideki on the bounce back week. It's just like, yeah, this is Daniel Berger. He's going to be solid for you and he might win like he did it to Charles Schwab. So the idea around, and I've never heard it presented that way. I think it's a great idea. Like, who did we not talk about? Who did we not spend any oxygen on? And why didn't we? I really like that, Sal.
Yeah, I hope I don't anchor myself onto this. I don't care too much. I think he might be my first one and done of the year.
Oh,
I might go Danny Berger here.
Oh boy. Okay. Well, I think that what's interesting about Webb is he's obviously the favorite here, but he has so many good spots throughout the year, whether it's, you know, Wyndham Waste Management, whether it's RBC, you know, whether it's Harbortown. So like, I don't know if I should be trying to find a guy like Berger, just like, oh, you know, Berger doesn't have a necessarily natural fit. I'll just play him here, or if I should just burn Webb. So that's the discussion I'm having with myself at the moment.
Yeah, I could see that. And I also, I'm just trying to look at it too. This isn't as full of a field. Like you're still going to get a couple of events and most of the events where you see another 10 to 20 golfers in the field. So that hurts a little bit more when you get to those. And really, where is, for me looking at this, whether it is Webb for your situation or even Berger, which I'm going to just talk myself into this, at $10,000 flat on DraftKings and where he comes in this field of just like up premier players, upscale players, how many more fields is he going to get where he just basically has to beat a Harris English, a Webb, a Morikawa, a Neiman? It's not one of the heavy hitters because we don't have the Rahms. We don't have the JTs. We don't have the Rorys, those guys in the field this week. I don't know how many events Berger's going to have without those guys in it this year. And for any of those guys, Webb, like you're talking about. So yeah, I think it makes sense to try and go this week into one of those guys that you're not going to see in a lot of other fields with a chance.
Oh boy. All right. Well, Daniel Berger catching steam for me at the moment. Sal Vetri, you are doing a lot of great DFS coverage for not only golf, for basketball, for football. You are in the thick of it right now, my man. Tell everybody what you have going on a weekly basis.
Yeah, we got them all. We got the DFS sports. So yeah, it's you can follow me on Twitter at SalVetriDFS. That kind of links over to some other stuff, but NBA content, we'll be starting up the golf content this week for the first full field event. And then yeah, NFL closing it out for the playoffs right now.
Much appreciated you hopping on, filling in for Greg this week. It was a lot of fun, and I'm hoping that we get a chance to do it again soon.
100%, man. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it. Ton of fun.
That's Sal Vetri. Follow him on Twitter at SalVetriDFS. You can follow me at RickRunGood. This has been The First Cut, and we'll catch you next time.
Paramount Plus and the National Park Foundation present A Mountain of Zen. This Earth Week, you can live stream seven national parks for 7 days on Paramount Plus. Paramount Plus, official streaming partner of the National Park Foundation.